Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up. A new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. We gotta change it, yeah. Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
That's right, we need some help, y'all. Welcome to MPH Radio. As the voice for Missing Pedro History, we'd like to welcome you to this program. Today's date is December 7th, 2019. Our theme today is Our Experiences in Cuba is a Missing Page of History. That's right, we have some special guests. We have just recently came back to Cuba. And one of the things we're going to do is talk about Cuba. It's a country that often generate a lot of curiosity in terms of what it is and what's going on. And often there's information that when you do receive it on Cuba, it's misdirected, it's not accurate, and we want to change that narrative. So that's our focus of our major presentation today on MPH. But before we get to our presentation, our special guest, what we will do today is, as always, we will give you something to think about, along with some chosen black minifacts, and we will give you a special commentary, a statement from the community by Brother High Key. Following that, we have some special articles we'll share with you, and then we'll get into our special theme for today. So again, we'd like to welcome everybody to MPH Radio, as the voice of MP Radio. Let's get started with the program by telling you to take out your pencil and some paper, and we want to give you something to think about and the quote of the week. This week, the quote of the week is, "You can't lead the people if you don't love the people." You can't save the people if you don't serve the people. Now, who made that quote of the week? I'll give you 10 seconds to think about it, and then I will give you the answer. Who is that quote belongs to? It belongs to Dr. Cornel West. That's our quote for the week. And just think about it again. You can't lead the people if you don't love the people. You can't save the people if you don't serve the people. That's a quote by Cornel West. And now we'll move to something to give you something to think about when we talk about freedom. This concept of freedom is a concept often talked about. Many people strive to try to achieve it or try to have it. But people have different perceptions of what is freedom. So we want you to think about, what is freedom? And to do this, there's a couple quotes we'd like to share with you by some historical figures who had their concept, who defined their concept of what freedom is. Now, there's a concept by Thomas Jefferson which stated that, what country can preserve its liberties if its rulers are not warned from time to time that their people preserve the spirit of resistance? Let them take arms. Let me just read that back to you again. He stated, what country can preserve its liberties if its rulers are not warned from time to time that their people preserve the spirit of resistance? Let them take arms. And that was the one concept of freedom. How does that fit into your definition, your world, where you conceive and think about this concept of freedom? A second one was by Adam Cummins. He stated that the only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion. Wow, that's interesting. He stated, the only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion. What do y'all think about that? How would you apply that concept in today's world? And last but not least, we're going to look at Benjamin Franklin. He once stated that they who will give up an essential liberty for a temporary security deserve neither liberty nor security. Let's read that one again. They who will give up an essential liberty for a temporary security deserve neither liberty nor security. And that's the philosophy of Benjamin Franklin. When you look at society and when you begin to look at this concept of freedom, how would that fit in your day, in today's world, in your world? So those are just some of the thoughts we'd like to kind of get you to think about when you talk about freedom, what it is, and how do you apply it in your daily world. So at this point in time, like always, what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick station break, and when we come back, we're going to present to you some MPH, Chosen Black Men of Fact, by Susan. And she's going to talk about some black men of facts and contributions that Africans in America made in the field of medicine. But let's pause for this cause when we come back, where we deal with some black men of fact, men of facts by Susan. This is MPH that you are listening to, MPH Radio.
Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. The Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force and truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Superior over me. We talk to each other in a friendship the country and into more countries. Bastards birth into Richmond, where the ghosts of childhood hungry. Walk the road my forefathers walked, climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came, my family tree, my family name. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peace Street. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain. By brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me? Without the enlightenment of all my folks. Reject, cause I set myself on a quest for truth. And you was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty.
We welcome you back to MPH Radio. You're listening to the voice of Missing Page of History. Take us back to our family, take us back to our roots, take us back home where we belong. We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. And at this point in time, we'll make a transition, get out your pen and your paper. Like always, our history is a very powerful history, and what we're going to do is share a little bit of our history with you by presenting some MPH Chosen Black Men Facts. A contributor and member of MPH, our sister Susie. We'll bring you in. Susie, welcome to MPH Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This afternoon, we'll be dealing with medicine, and we have four individuals. We'll give you a brief history on their background. And Africans in America have always practiced medicine, yet for many years, prejudice has obscured their accomplishments. Generations of physicians, surgeons, and nurses. And the first minute fact is going to be by Lewis T. Wright. Lewis T. Wright, 1891 to 1952, became the first African American appointed to the surgical staff at Harlem Hospital in 1919. He immediately protested the poor conditions present and set to work. Improving patient care standards and the professionalism of the staff. Writing for the NAACP magazine Crisis in the 1930s, Wright challenged those who believed that African Americans harbored more diseases than the rest of the population. He continued to work at Harlem Hospital until 1949, where he also became an expert on head injuries and served as the president of its medical boards. The second such Black History mini fact is from John S. Rock, 1825 to 1866. He studied medicine with two white doctors and was eventually accepted into the American Medical College in Philadelphia, for which he graduated in 1852. He practiced dentistry and invented and improved a variety of artificial teeth. Working in Boston in the early 1850s, he treated fugitive slaves and looked after their medical needs. Later in his career, he turned to practicing law. In 1865, Rock became the first African American to argue a case before the U.S. Supreme Court. The next mini fact is for Dorothy Celeste Boulding Ferbey, 1898 to 1980. Started her own medical clinic in an impoverished neighborhood of Washington, D.C., following the completion of her medical training in 1925. She was a member of several civic organizations with an impressive education credentials. Ms. Ferbey dedicated her life to lowering the mortality rate among African-American communities in the South. She succeeded Mary Methuen as president of the National Council of Women, Negro Women in 1945, as she founded the Women's Institute, which advocated for providing women with adequate health care. And last and final minute black fact for today is William Warwick Cardozo, 1905 to 1962, was a noted physician and pediatrician who became a pioneer researcher of sickle cell anemia. He discovered that disease mainly affected African Americans and that it was often inherited. Cardozo also published research in the areas of children, gastrointestinal disorders, Hodgkin's disease, and child growth and development. In addition to his research, he was an assistant professor in pediatrics at Howard University's College of Medicine and Freedom Hospitals. And I've just given you four Black Minute Facts, and our source is the African American Heritage Calendar of 2017.
So, I'd like to thank you for your Black Minute Facts. At this point in time, what we're going to do, like always, MPH Radio is a institution that is dedicated to the upliftment of the underserved communities. We want to be a voice for the voiceless. And what we have done recently, we have created a segment called A Commentary from the Community. Each program, we have someone from the various community who will give them the freedom to express their thoughts, ideas, to communicate to our people. These ideas and thoughts are expressions based upon that individual's. It does not necessarily reflect MPH or any of its members. At this point in time, we'd like to bring in Haki Kamafi Machoki. He's from the community, the Richmond, Virginia area, and we will give him the opportunity to speak to our audience in terms of his commentary from the community. So right now, we're going to bring in Brother Haki. Brother Haki, we'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. And what is your commentary for today's program to our community?
First of all, let me thank you for having me. Now, I want to talk about the instability of government. Now, the instability of government has had a devastating impact on the citizenry, but particularly its poorest, most vulnerable citizens. You know, hardships imposed upon the citizenry eventually elevates to a degree that the level of impulse control become almost impossible for people to control. Now, these hardships are imposed upon the citizenry and has less to do with economic inefficiencies and more to do with political machinations, where power or the pursuit of power precedes other concerns, be it the country, human life, or even the planet. The maintenance of power has its precedent and systems all too eager to label the poor as the problem. One such system, Rex 84, seeks to incarcerate large number of people who the system sees as esoteric or expandable. So we're talking increasing about a large number of people the system sees as having no worth and no value in terms of society. Now, this program originated in the 80s, and while the repercussions to humanity have been widely expressed, the attendance of such a program persists to this day. In fact, a new program based upon the same tenets of the Rex 84, providing the same metrics, was approved by Congress in the 90s. This program, National Defense Authorization Act, goes a step further. Not only does it authorize internment or incarceration of a large number of a citizenry, it has created five regions throughout the U.S. the citizenry is to be locked up. This plan is pernicious on many levels, in part because the basic concern of poor people could easily be addressed by prioritizing government expenditures in a way to invest in its citizens. Of course, this view is compounded by the fact changes to the role of government have been greatly reduced, whereby special interest functions as government. Special interest has been very successful in redefining the values of society, and those values do not include humanity, justice, or fair play. In this context, it is easy to see the move to deny education to citizens through charter schools, or tax laws empowering the wealthy not to pay taxes, or media that is subservient to power. Now, given this backdrop, is it difficult to understand the proliferation of poverty and why the wealthy see the poor as an existential threat? It seems to me counting oneself among the poor is an intelligent move. After all, only a finite number can become billionaires in a declining economy. And this has been Haki, and I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Brother Haki, and this is a commentary from the community. If you would like to share your commentary with MP Radio, please go to or email missingpageshistory1@yahoo.com, and we'll be more than happy to give you that opportunity. So right now, what we're going to do, we're going to pause for the calls, we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we're going to share with you some articles of interest, and then we're going to follow that up with our guest today, who will address our theme today, which is our experiences in Cuba, a missing page of history. We'll be right back. This is MPH Radio.
Take away.
welcome you back to MPH Radio. Yes, find your strength in love. Find your strength in the community. Find your strength among the people. Find your strength in your history. But you must find it and teach it in a way where we can pass it along to our youth. We welcome you back to MPH Radio. Right now, what we want to do is we're going to go to the segment called Articles of Interest. There are a couple of articles of interest that we would like to call to your attention. It raises some concerns in terms of how things function, how things are done, and gives something to think about. So the first article of interest we would like to just briefly talk to you about that comes from the Tacoma News Tribune. This article was written back in April 11, 1953, and it is titled, "There'll Be No Escape in Future from Telephones." Now remember, this article was written back in April 11, 1953. There will be no escape in future from telephone. And it reads from the American Press that the telephone of the future, Mark R. Sullivan, San Francisco president and director of the Pacific Telephone and Telegraph Company, said in an address Thursday night, just what form the future telephone will take is, of course, pure speculation. Here is my prophecy, and this is his prophecy. It, in its final development, the phone will be carried about by the individual, perhaps as we carry a watch today. It probably will require no dial or equivalent, and I think the user will be able to see each other, if they want, as they talk. Who knows, but what it may actually translate from one language to another. Now, this is what he projected. This is what he foresee what a telephone would be like back in 1953. And we look at the phone today, seems like this reality came true. And one of the things I think this article raises with us is that many things that happen today has been and continue to be planned years in advance, 10, 20, and 30 years in advance. So we should always be keen of ideas, how they come to existence, and when things happen, they are not something that happened by night. They are constantly chosen. They are constantly planned, and one of the things people who are organized is that they plan things for far ahead in the future. So we need to recognize that important lesson of the importance of planning in long-term planning. So if you get a chance, check the article out. We thought that was a really interesting article to go back in time and take a look at what it stated in 1953 and the reality that we are living today. A second article of interest is titled, Twitter CEO Want to Move to Africa, Which Would Define the Future. Now, this was about Toby Snapshot. This is a real interesting article, and I'll just read it to you. This is what it says. It says, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey met entrepreneurs in Ethiopia on his month-long trip to Africa. Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey is planning to move to Africa next year for 3 to 6 months, he said, after a month-long trip to entrepreneur hubs on the continent. Said to be leading the continent for now, Dorsey tweeted, Africa will define the future, especially the Bitcoin one. Not sure where yet, but I'll be leaving here for 3 to 6 months, mid 2020, grateful I was able to experience a small part. He has spent the month of November visiting entrepreneurs in Ethiopia, Ghana, Nigeria, and South Africa. One of the ideas in terms of why this article was chosen as an article of interest is that why would someone of his capability as well see the importance of Africa and want to go to Africa, where many African people, African descendants, do not want to visit Africa. But here he is planning on going to Africa for 3 to 6 months, and he's talking about investing and doing business in Africa. Where is the African community when it comes to us wanting to come back home to Africa? So that's just to give you something to think about. Right now, what we're going to do is we're going to deal with our theme today, which is our experiences in Cuba, a missing page of history. Also, one of the things that Missing Pages of History wants to do is to seek out history and issues that not only impact our community, but there is histories and events that often is not even included in the realities of our today's world. And many times today, we know when you talk about Cuba as a country that most people know very little about, particularly in our underserved communities. And what they do know about Cuba, many times, it's not based on truth. There's a lot of dishonesty when it comes to the struggle, the realities of Cuba. And what we want to do at Missing Pages of History is to bring realities to our people, communities, where they'll know the truth and they act upon it. So what we're going to do right now, we're going to talk about subjects that very rarely, objectively is talked about, and very few people have had a chance to visit a very important country as it relates to Africa, African people around the world. So with this discussion, our experiences in Cuba, a missing page of history, we can bring in two of our guests today, Carolyn Taylor and Alvin Foster. Recently, they have visited Cuba and just came back. And we'd like to get their first-hand knowledge from them on their experiences in Cuba. So right now, we can welcome Carolyn and welcome Alvin to Missing Pages of History. Welcome, Carolyn. Welcome, Alvin.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Alvin Foster.
Okay. We welcome both y'all. We'll start with you, Mr. Foster. We just told our audience that we'd like to hear y'all experiences recently coming back from Cuba. You know, many times when the media over here talk about Cuba, we always hear the things about it's a poor country, it's a dictated country run by one country. People are forced to do things. People can't think this and that. Brother Alvin, just a general synopsis. When you went to Cuba, and I understand you've been to Cuba more than once, but from your last trip, you're just coming back less than a month ago, when you was in Cuba, just give people a sense of the environment, what it felt like when you was in Cuba.
Cuba, as an Afro-American, going to Cuba has always been an eye-opener. An eye-opener in the sense of, one, the way people care about each other, two, is the racism, the lack of racism, or at least not anywhere near the level you'd experience in the United States. Three, the number of people of color that are included throughout the hierarchy in Cuba, and an absence of homelessness. Those are the things that strike you right away.
And for you, Sister Carolyn, what was your overall general impression when you first arrived in Cuba and when you came back? What's your general feeling that you gathered when you was in Cuba?
I was really impressed by the state of mind of the Cubans. They're generous people. There's safety all around. You don't have to fear any kind of violence or being hurt walking the streets at any time of the day or night. They are intelligent people because they're all very highly educated. And they're healthy people because of the expertise of the doctors and the physicians in Cuba and their groundbreaking experiences and the things that they have developed that no one else in the world has developed. So we have the opportunity to visit these places. And as a matter of fact, the general attitude of the Cuban people were friendly and open.
That's interesting you say that, Sister Carolyn, because one of the things I asked both of y'all was, what was the attitude and the meaning of the Cuban people toward you as you traveled throughout their cities and interact with them? Can you talk to us
a
little bit more about that?
Everyone was very generous. Mm-hmm. Everyone was generous. They were kind. They were open to letting us know about their history. The people that we interacted with were very open with telling us about their experiences in Cuba. The doctors, we did go to the museum, the history. We learned. We went to the health environment. We went to the Institute of Medicine. And everyone was willing to share. The top doctors, the top folks who in the institution. We talked to restaurant owners, people at all levels who were very kind.
And, Brother Evan, your description on the attitude of the Cuban people towards you when you were there.
I'll just start out by seconding what Carol said. I can't figure how to add to that except that I agree. It's a very friendly country. People are and musical and art is everywhere in Cuba. It's their largest, they have the largest ballet repertoire in the world, and they're doing things that you wouldn't expect a country as poor as Cuba to do. And they have no homelessness because they take care of people. They care about people and feel that's our right to have food, clothing, and shelter.
You know, Sister Carlin, one of the things in terms of my understanding, y'all stay in Cuba, y'all got to be there at a very special time. And that is to say, they had an international solidarity conference of countries and people and movements coming to Cuba to show that support for Cuba. Can you talk a little bit about that atmosphere and the nature of that conference and maybe what you may have gotten from that?
I was very impressed that there were representatives from all the major nations around the world, people who are of the mind that they want freedom for everyone. They want good health for everyone. They want people to have homes and to just have the opportunity to grow. And the countries that were at that conference, the representatives were very enthusiastic, very passionate about their cause. Many have been working for many, many years to try to help folks who are impacted in Cuba by the embargo imposed by the U.S. and other countries. And it has impacted people in a way so that they don't have access to the internet to get the message across because they're going to be blocked with the message. They don't have access to a lot of imported goods that they need for their industries and for their vegetable growing, their farmers and things in the country because they're impacted in a negative way. And they just want to express the fact that the world is united behind Cuba, behind Venezuela, behind all of those countries that are struggling today.
And Brother Alvin, can you give us your impression of the nature of the conference, what you got from it, and what the atmosphere was like?
Well, I want to mention that the name of the conference was, it's a long one, Anti-Imperialist Meeting in Favor of Democracy and Against Neoliberalism, which was held in Havana, Cuba, November 1st through 3rd, 2019. Carol and I and others traveled with the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, and of course Lee Robinson, who's the MC on the show, is the main person behind certainly the Richmond, Virginia All African People's Revolutionary Party. And it's a fantastic group, and they believe that scientific socialism, Marxism, and absence of private property, and et cetera, et cetera. I think Lee Robinson and the other members of the group should be commended. The conference was a collection of anti-imperialists from around the world there in support of Cuba. but also just to talk to each other about how they're progressing in their own country and how better to continue to fight for the people. The conference had three goals. I won't go over each one, but basically they were like to how can we effectively organize against imperialism, what strategies do we need, et cetera, that kind of thing. And at the end of the conference, they sent out papers summarizing the meetings that were held throughout the conference addressing the issues of imperialism. And another great thing about the conference was the interpretation and the place where the conference was held. Unfortunately, I don't speak Spanish, but they had great interpreters that translated any language that was spoken at the podium by the respective leaders into English, Spanish, or whatever language you needed. And it all went very smoothly, and I applaud the Cubans for pulling off a conference that was first class and first rate.
So you got this experience firsthand that Cuba is not isolated, it's not by itself. You know, most of the majority of the progressive and revolutionary world is in solidarity with Cuba. You got a chance to see that. Now, while you're in Cuba, I also understand that you got a chance to see some of the many gifts that Cuba gives to humanity. And one of the gifts they've been giving for over 20 years or more is ELON, the School of Latin America of Medicine. Can y'all talk a little bit about y'all experiences of going to the medical school and what did you learn and why that program is so significant to African people, not only here in the United States, but throughout the world? Just talk about a little bit about the noble idea of that particular school. What do y'all make of that? Start with you, Sister Caroline.
Cuba offers free education to anyone from around the world. And we were very fortunate to go into the medical facility to be briefed by the head doctors there to look at the facility. And one great gift that we received is that we were able to peep into a class that was taking place where there were students from Angola and the Congo. And they were there receiving their medical education. They were just so enthusiastic. It was a beautiful sight to see these students there. They all were beautiful. Their faces were beautiful. They were happy to be there. We also went to the Institute of Medicine. We weren't able to go into the classes there because classes were in session. But the director came out and he gave us a tour of the grounds and explained the history of the institute there. Cuba has made advances in medicine, and they've offered their medical services to every disaster. They sent doctors, they sent relief as much as they can, and they're a very small country, but they're reaching out to give aid, which in some cases has actually been rejected, especially by the U.S., but they're willing to help, and they're willing to help those who need, and they respond to emergencies.
And Brother Abbott, your take from the medical school?
Again, I can just endorse what Carolyn said. Another thing that struck me was that Cuba's about trying to establish, or they're on the road to establishing, a healthcare system throughout all of Africa that will be, of course, free. They are not only do they respond to emergencies, where they work full-time on the ground in Africa trying to set up the various classes and hospitals around Africa. And I understand that most, if not like 90% of the students enrolled at the medical school in Cuba, ELIM, are African or should we say from African countries. So I'm very impressed by their goal and very impressed by what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, one of the things when you look at Cuba culturally and you don't see it in the West and particularly in the U.S., they don't show its true representation in terms of the makeup of Cuba. Well, my experience is going to Cuba, and y'all can share y'all. It has a heavy African culture or African culture influence. It has a lot of African populations. Did y'all sort of find that out to be the true reality of Cuba when you was there?
Yes, I'm sorry, but not only in just looking at people and their parents, they go deeper than that. They feel they are African. I've never spoken to a Cuban that didn't feel they had African heritage. And no matter what we were in the United States would call their skin color, they all feel related to Africa, and it's one of the reasons Castro and was able to send armies to throughout Africa to support the causes against imperialism, because the population felt that they were merely helping them back in their real home country. It wasn't a matter of going to help that particular country. It was a matter of helping people, my grandfather or anyone else who still remains in the country that I came through, even though it may have been 50 or 100 years ago. And that sort of unity with Africa is striking throughout all of Cuba.
Sister Carla, your take on and makeup?
I think that it was very important and impressive to me, because one of the themes that I carry when I talk is that people need to know who they are. They need to know their history. They need to know the struggles. And I find that Cubans really know their history. It's very strong in them about the revolution, but even times before that, what happened in the country, intelligent young people. And that is the foundation of any kind of culture, because the young people are the people of the future, and they're going to keep progressing the way they are, but then to make improvements. And I can see that. I think great things are going to happen because of the young people in Cuba who are so intelligent, who are so learned, who know their history, who know their identity.
Well, you know, Alvin and Carolyn, also understand that y'all had the opportunity to have a direct one-on-one dialogue with one of the various Afro-Cuban communities as y'all went and visit a committee in defense of the revolution, the CDR. How was that particular meeting with that particular community when you was there in Cuba?
That was the Committee for the Defense of the Revolution group of people in each, in different districts who are banded together, who know their history, who are defending their community against any kind of criminal activity, any kind of negativity or invasion that may arouse. They are willing to give their lives to protect and to fight for their community, for the safety of the people. And these women and men that we met were very generous. They gave us long histories and explained their mission. They introduced to us the young people. One very young girl was an artist. Another was a musician who played the violin for us. They shared, I don't know, I think they were 8 and 10. I'm not sure. Then there was another beautiful young lady who was the head, I believe, of the ballet company in Cuba. And so we got to meet some very impressive people. We got to meet a captain of the CDR. And I don't know, I was just so impressed with their dedication to their community and to the lives of the children, education of the children.
Brother Abin, your take for that particular meeting in Canada with the CDR?
Okay, as you already know, Chicago seems to be the largest city in the United States most likely to get community hiring and controlling of the police directly. They already have that in Cuba. That is the role of the CDR, or the Committees in Defense of the Revolution, CDR. They are responsible for everything that goes on within their 2, 3, or 4 block square community. They elect each other, and from there, eventually, if you're good enough, you wind up as president of Cuba. So it's a ground-up kind of strategy. You get your exercise and your appreciation is made in your CDR. And if anyone is acting out of line or, should we say, needs services, and that's more important, the CDR is there to assist them. It's as if in Cuba you have a right to good health, you have a right to crime-free environment, you have a right to those things. Instead, in the United States, you know, we have police in our community who are still killing us, even after the exposure to the lousy defenses that the police usually conjure up, and I'm using that word literally, they make them up. They still get off with no punishment whatsoever. Anyway, the point is, Cuba has solved that by using ground-up methods from the bottom, for community control of police, community control of the streets, community control of a lot of things that we merely don't even bother with in the United States because other people control.
And the sense of just looking at the socialization process of people among themselves, how they interact with each other, how did you view that or how did you feel when you was observing how did they interact with each other? Versus how people interact over here. What were some of the things that may have changed your mind? Because people always ask me, what do they do to Cuba? What do they do in Cuba? That's what many American citizens ask me. What do they do in Cuba? So maybe y'all can speak to that question from your observation, participation. What do people do in Cuba, Carla?
They were very respectful. Everybody was respectful and kind. We had an evening where we went to a jazz club, but before we went in, we had the opportunity to just sit outside and wait for the club to open. And we saw hundreds, literally hundreds of people walking down the street, young people with their children. They were all so happy. They were all just out there to be living, you know, to be living a life of freedom and, you know, and it was like kind of late at night, like after 9, and they had babies and strollers, and it felt so safe and secure. It felt, I mean, you felt at ease. You felt uplifted by the spirit of the people. So I'm very thankful to have had that experience, and of course, the music and the art, as Alvin said, that is, the people are so talented without even having any training. They're naturally talented. Beautiful.
Brother Evan, your general observation of the interaction of people, how they socialize each other, what did you observe and encounter?
Well, I think one of the reasons why the Cubans are as friendly as they are is that the sense of competitiveness or being on first or getting the most for me is much reduced. Over in the United States, you feel that everything is in competition. There's only one piece of bread left in the store, and you got to be the first one to get it. But you don't get that sense in Cuba, so I think that alone accounts for a lot of the way people interact with you. They're more trusting. I'm sure there were police in Cuba, but I'm not sure, other than when we entered the official convention center, that I remember seeing what a policeman looks like, even though I'm sure they were around. It's just that that's not the kind of fear among other of each other that they have in Cuba that we have in spades in the United States. In the United States, you have to show ID and empty your pockets to go into the courthouse or the mayor's office. It's the distrust that just runs rampant in this country just isn't existing at that level in Cuba. It's that alone is remarkable, because I'm the kind of guy that hates to empty my pockets and show all my IDs just to go and argue a parking ticket. So anyway, I think that accounts for the friendliness of the Cuban people and their willingness to help each other and the trust that they have among themselves.
Okay, Carl and Alvin, I have a caller who may have a question to ask you. We're going to take this one question and then we'll come back. We got you all to give us a close remark. So let's try this call. Let's see the caller here. We'd like to have a question or comment. Caller 6029, the mic is yours.
Yes. Let me ask you this in terms of, you know, the question in terms of racism. And you alluded to the fact that the Cubans are very open in terms of their history, and that's very, very good. But do you personally see any vestiges of racism in terms of interaction between the lighter-skinned Cubans and the darker-skinned Cubans while you were there?
I didn't understand. Did I what? About
okay,
interaction?
Okay.
I missed it.
I personally
yeah.
did not see any racism between the lighter-skinned people and the darker-skinned people in Cuba. I did not see that. I understand that it exists and that people are organized even today to fight any kind of racism that exists there. We had an interpreter who was born in Havana, and this was our tour guide, and then his driver. So one was dark, one was light, and the interaction between them was wonderful. They were curious about us as we were curious about them. So as they were teaching us, we were teaching them also. So maybe it's existing there, but during the time that we were there, I personally did not encounter that.
If I understood the question properly, I'm always shocked at how people look for ways to minimize the impact of Cuba. One is, of course, they have racism in Cuba. Well, hell, they have racism in a lot of places around the world. The answer is, how are they working on it? Are they working to eliminate it? Five of the top political positions in Cuba, below the prime minister, are made up of three of the positions are women. Two of those three women are black. So, and as I traveled around the Art Institute, the head of that was black. A lot of the positions that would go to whites here in the United States are shared with the blacks in Cuba. So, of course, they have racism, but they set up committees, and the CDC's work constantly to reduce the lingering of imperialist exploitation.
Okay. All right, Carla. At this point in time, what we're going to do, Carolyn and Alvin, we would like to give you the opportunity to talk to our listening audience why they should go to Cuba, why they should support Cuba, and why they should never feel the Cuban Social Revolution. Start with you, Sister Carolyn. Why should they go to Cuba, support the works and the ideals that the Cubans are trying to do in terms of trying to have betterment for all of humanity?
Well, first of all, we need to know the truth about Cuba. We need to know the truth about the people. And once you get there, you will understand, your biases or whatever, your misinformation that you've been carrying on around about Cuba because of what you read in the news or you hear. Those things will fall away because you're in the midst of a people who are trying so hard to fighting for justice and freedom around the world, fighting so that everybody can have good health, so that everybody can be free from fear. I think that you need to understand the impact that the embargo is having on those people. Even though they are doing the best they can, they don't have a lot of things. They need help. And so people from the delegations that came from the U.S. bought toiletries and medicine, like vitamins and aspirins and things like that to the people, because even though health care is free, there's still a lot that is missing. And I think that we need to know that we're responsible to help each other. We're responsible to help our own communities, but there's people around the world who need our help, who need our understanding, who need our prayers, if we can only just speak about Cuba, if we could just tell people about Cuba like we're doing today and raise the consciousness, I think it's very important. I just encourage people to go. It was a wonderful experience to me. It was an eye-opener, and I really appreciate Lee Robinson for inviting me to go. And I will never forget this, and I hope to go again soon.
Brother Kevin and Brother Evan, your final thoughts and why we should be in solidarity with the Cuban Revolution and the effort of its people.
Well,
how can we support
Of course, Cuba, like all countries under U.S. blockade, including Zimbabwe, by the way, things that they have are often overused, like they're famous for their old cars. Those cars are old because they can't get parts. We all know that. The point I'm making is that in spite of the harshness that our blockade has in, put on the Cuban people, something like $146 billion since the start of it, the Cuban people still exporting 800-plus doctors around the world. Now, the number 800 is interesting because that's the number of estimated military bases by that the U.S. United States has around the world. So while they're exporting doctors and goodness and kindness and health, we're exporting violence, killing, and exploitation. Now, there's that dramatic difference alone tells you the different nature of the, at least the leaders in our country versus Cuba. So go to Cuba to experience what a people who are not afraid to go out at night, who don't believe they're going to go hungry, and who believe they can go to school as long as their abilities qualify them. That's alone, if you have any sense of society, gives you a different feeling of how the Cuban people feel versus the Americans.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, to Sister Carolyn and Brother Alvin, we'd like to thank you for your contribution to speak to our theme for today, which is Our Experiences in Cuba, A Missing Page of History. And for our listening audience, if you'd like for Carolyn or Alvin to come and speak to your community, your group, please contact Missing Pages of History, and we will put you in contact with them. You can email
us.
I do want to mention
Raul Diaz, who was our guide in Cuba. The reason I mention him because he speaks very good English. He was very good, and he's the black guy that Carolyn was referring to, who she saw interacting with people of all kinds of colors. And it's not like over here. So, Raul Diaz, and you can get in contact with him, of course, through Lee Robinson, the organizer of this show.
And if you'd like for Carolyn or Alvin to come to your community, your school, please contact MPH by emailing us at missingpageshistory1@yahoo.com. Again, Carolyn, Alvin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
At this point in time, y'all listen to MPH Radio, and what we're going to do right now, we're going to pause for this call. When we come back, we can tell you how you can continue to help build and support MPH. We'll be right back after the station break. do gather. This is what MPH Radio is trying to do. You're trying to put out the call. Not only let's get together and stay together, but let's organize and make this a better world for all of humanity. We welcome you back to MPH on December 7, 2019, which our theme today was our experiences in Cuba, a missing page of history. We now are going to be doing our closing out phase, where we want you to listen carefully and for you to come forward and help us build MPH Radio and Missing Page of History as an organization. And Susie, who is a member and contributor of MPH, she's going to talk about some of the events, some of the things we're going to be doing, and we need your help. So right now, we're going to turn the mic over to Susie.
Hello. Hi. I'd like to let you know, thank you for listening, first of all. And we have several things going on, which we have. One is the MPH Radio program, which is on Saturdays, which is biweekly at 1 o'clock p.m. That's one thing where you can listen and support and call in. Also, we have the MPH TV show, which is done through Comcast Channel 95 and Fios Channel 36. It's on Wednesdays between 9 and 10. Our next show will start around the spring and the summer of 2020. And it's a weekly show, and you can we also allow live call-ins. And we have an ongoing MPH T-shirt and cap drive, and you can place your order by going to our website, which is www.mphinc.org. And last and finally, we'll be starting in the new year. We're on March the 21st. We'll have a first raffle drawing, which you can listen to 818-337-0016, where you need not be present, and it can help MPH build strong communities through communications. Yes, we can, and we'd like your support. And I turn you back over.
That's right. You listen to the voice of MPH Radio, and closing again to find out the nature of the overall threats of MPH, please visit our website, like Susie said earlier, by going to www.mphinc.org. We'd like to thank you again for allowing us the opportunity to come into your homes this evening. We encourage you to come help build MPH. Please, make a financial contribution. If you want to have a gift tax write-off at the end of this year, this is the time to do it. You can send it to MPH, Inc. at P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. But more importantly, we want you to come and join MPH. We are open membership drive right now going on. We can be no more stronger than the participation from our community. So please do that. Again, we'll be back next week at 1 p.m. Join us. And like always, we're not going to say fight the power, but we are going to encourage you to get up and stand up for your rights. We'll see you next week. You've been listening to Missing Pages of History.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights.
sing and make everybody feel high.
You listen to MPH Radio. You can send all contribution donations to Missing Patriot History, Inc., P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261.
Get up, stand up,
get up,
stand up.
Don't give up the fight.
Life is your right.
Get up, stand up.
We can't give up the fight.
Stand up for your right.
Lord, Lord.
Get up, stand up.
Keep us bubbling on.
Don't give up the fight.
Yeah.
We're sick and tired of your easy kissing game. Dying and go to heaven in a Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand. Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light.
What you
gonna we gonna do? Stand up for
yeah,
our rights.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You better
get up, stand up
in the
don't
morning.
Don't give it up.
Stand up for your rights.
Stand up
in
right
the
now.
Night.
Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Don't give it up. Don't give it up.